Welcome back to the Big Green Politics Podcast. We are back with another news episode.
Two news episodes in a row.
Oh, yeah.
Look at us go. So consistent.
Yeah.
So last week we sat down to record just one episode where we covered the latest Green Wave elections from September and October, but we realized that there are simply too many to have in one episode, and we ended up having three episodes worth of content. So we decided to make three episodes out of it.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing today. We're recording the second episode. If you haven't listen to the first one, check it out, because it covers Colombia and also protests in Hawaii. And in this episode, we're going to give our two cents on the elections in Portugal and in Switzerland and explain how the Greens did there.
We're also going to follow up on our interview with Abhijit Mane on the Canadian federal elections and compare those results and how the Canadian Greens did there to the Greens in Portugal and Switzerland to draw some parallels, but also to acknowledge the key differences.
One key difference being the electoral system, which is also a huge issue in the UK at the moment with the general election, which we're also going to touch on a little bit.
Okay, let's start with the election in Portugal, which was held on the 6th of October. So voters in Portugal headed to the polls for parliamentary elections. And of course, the results are in. Prime Minister António Costa's socialists were re-elected, but without an absolute majority. But before I get into how the Greens did, I want to briefly talk about the Greens in Portugal in general, because it is an interesting country. They have three different Green parties there, because one is not enough.
Yeah, you have a real choice between what kind of Green politics you want to choose, huh?
Exactly. So one is Os Verdes, which is a member of the European Greens. Then you have the PAN party, People, Animals, Nature party, which sends MEPs to the Greens EFA group in the European Parliament. So they're basically like the European Greens partner in a way. And then you have the eco-socialists, LIVRE, who are basically a friend to the European Greens.
Mm.
So two out of these three Green parties did really well. And then there was one. For that one, not so much. And I'm talking about Os Verdes, who are in a coalition with the Portuguese Communist Party, PCP.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do really well. And the main reason for that was them being really tied to their coalition, which is called the Unitary Democratic Coalition. I guess because they're a part of that coalition, they looked a bit more mainstream, a bit more status quo compared to the other Green parties.
Yeah. It often works against smaller parties when they go into coalition with other parties that are larger than them.
So their vote went from 8.25% 2015 elections to 6.33%, which they received just now in the 2019 elections. But at the end, they were able to get two MPs into the parliament. So that's still good.
Yeah.
But the other Greens in the country did really well. Like I mentioned, PAN, People, Animals, Nature party, added three more seats to its current single seat in the parliament.
Nice.
Yeah. And then LIVRE, which is the eco-socialists, got their first ever member of parliament elected.
Oh, yeah.
She is Joacine Catar Moreira. She has a PhD in African studies, and she's the founder of the Institute of Black Women in Portugal. So her leading the eco-socialist in Portugal also made her the first black woman to lead a party in Portugal. And she's actually one of three black women that were elected as MPs in this election in Portugal. And in her victory speech, she actually said that she's vowing to become the voice of anti-racism and left-wing radical feminism in the parliament.
Ugh.
I know, just so much fangirling. So three black women MPs. One of those MPs is Romualda Fernandez. I am just going to butcher these names. Just, you know,
yeah,
FYI.
Yeah, forewarned.
She is a lawyer and a migration expert who won a seat representing the socialists. And then the other one was Beatriz Gomez Diaz, the president of Anti-Racism Association. And she ran with the far left bloc party.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all leftists, basically, yeah?
Mm.
But more good news, these three black women are also three of a total of 89 women that got elected in the latest election.
Oh, how is that compared to how big is their parliament?
So yeah, this is, I mean, the whole parliament has 230 seats. So this is actually, it's low, but it's an unprecedented number. And because they had this new gender parity law requiring that 40% of elected lawmakers need to be female. So that's
awesome.
How they got this number to 89. So these are the first black women to get into the parliament in Portugal, right? I mean, it's 2019. It's happening now.
Yeah.
And another unbelievable thing is that since 1974, when Portugal turned to democracy, so up until now, the only black MP in the parliament was a man, a brother, Helder Amaral from the Conservative Party.
Wow. That's crazy.
Like, this country has a huge colonialist history.
Oh my God.
And in 2019, they are just like having their first few black MPs.
Mm,
like, that parliament is so white.
Yeah.
That's one white parliament.
Wow.
I mean, so imagine in this country, Livre just got over 1% of the votes and they got one MP into the parliament.
Mm.
Even though the threshold is that low, we're talking about just a few black people, black MPs in the parliament.
Yeah, Portugal is a country that has one of the longest lived empires in world history, isn't it? It existed for almost six centuries. So it's had about 500 years of links to Africa, but just one black lawmaker.
Exactly. You know, and now we're talking about a few more, but it's 2019.
Mm.
You know, it's been centuries.
Wow.
Another election that was held under proportional representation was the Swiss parliamentary elections. It was held on the 20th of October in order to elect 200 lower house lawmakers and then 46 senators for the next 4-year term.
Mm-hmm.
Let me mention the results first, and then we can also talk about how the lower house lawmakers and a senator thing, that whole thing works. So Switzerland is another country with more than one Green Party.
Jealous.
One is the Green Party of Switzerland, GPS, which is a member of the European Greens, and the other one is the Green Liberals, the GLP.
GPS is more left-wing and Green Liberals are more economically liberal and have more of a kind of centre-right position on the economy and on social affairs, which is quite unusual for a Green Party.
Are they like quite actually liberal?
Well, they're described as a centrist liberal party and they sit with ALDE in the European Parliament.
Oh, not even Green ZFA.
Yeah, not the Green ZFA.
Scandalous. Absolutely scandalous.
So that's quite a different position politically, actually.
Wow. But, well, that makes it more interesting because they both made gains.
Yeah.
And I think they both kind of used the mobilization around climate change to make gains.
Yes. And they're appealing to different sections of the population, right? Because there's a lot of people who increasingly are feeling very concerned about the climate and who, you know, love nature and want to stop air and water pollution and so on, but who are not left-wing. And in general, Green parties are strongly left-wing. So the Green Liberals really appeals to a whole and growing section of the population.
Yeah, like those moderate liberals who are concerned about climate, the climate crisis, actually then did have an option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that without voting for what they perceive as socialism.
Yeah. But also, when we look at this election, that's not the only good news, because the populist right-wing, anti-immigration, Eurosceptic party, you know, that whole package, it always comes like that. That party, the Swiss People's Party, SVP, they remained the strongest. It's gotten... Oof, rough.
I didn't realize they were already the biggest party.
Yeah, it's gotten 53 seats, but that's 12 fewer than it had, than what they had after the last elections. And also, this result marks their worst result since 1999.
Nice.
So that's pretty good news.
Yeah.
So this means the Green Party of Switzerland, GPS, will be on the fourth place with 28 seats. That's 28 out of 200, right?
Mm.
And the Green Liberals got 16 seats. So that means the two Green parties together took more than 20% of the vote.
That's huge.
I know, right? More great news from this election. A record 40% of candidates for the National Council were women.
Woohoo! That's amazing.
I know. So, and that's mainly thanks to what happened this summer, which was hundreds of thousands of women across Switzerland protesting to call for equal pay and conditions and an end to discrimination.
Wow. Women's marches and kind of these huge strikes in the street has such a huge effect.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Spain, when we had this huge women's strike last year, and women just stopped whatever they were doing, whether it was paid or unpaid work, and took to the streets. And then the next government, which was kind of created, all the cabinet ministers, which hasn't lasted long, admittedly, because they've already had another election. But that's a different that's a different matter. That's just Spain right now. But there was a direct link between women coming out onto the street and then the most female-dominated cabinet ever in Spain's history.
Mm-hmm. This is also similar to the elections held in Canada, because they also saw the highest number of female candidates running in Canada's history, with 651 female candidates across all parties.
And how many of those got elected?
Well, yeah, exactly. So out of 651, 98 women got elected, which is a record, but still.
Oof.
Like, the question is, why not more? Why not
more? Sadly, in the UK, at the moment, there's an alarming number of women stepping back from politics at this election.
Mm.
A lot of women are retiring prematurely because of abuse.
Oh, wow.
58 politicians announced they will not stand again during these elections. And 58 politicians.
Ah.
And only 18 of them are women and 40 are men, which is actually proportional to the current makeup of parliament, which is firstly shocking.
Yeah.
But also the reason why it's alarming is that these are young women. They're not the men that are retiring because it's, you know, it's time. They were always planning to retire from politics. These are women that are on average 10 years younger than the men, and that have spent a decade less in parliament than their retiring male colleagues.
Wow.
This Brexit debate over the past 3 years has brought out an unreal amount of rage and anger and abuse, especially towards female politicians on all sides. Female politician on the right, just as likely to get vitriol, rape, abuse, rape threats, death threats. And if you're black, such as Diane Abbott, the abuse you get is just even higher, even more violent, even more hateful. So, for example, Amnesty International analysed tweets sent to female politicians in the six-month run-up to the 2017 general election and found that over 25,000 abusive messages were sent to female politicians.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. And of those, Shadow Home Secretary Diane Abbott received almost a third of them. Yeah, just one woman. I mean,
she got all that for the team. Most of it.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry that you had positive news and then I...
you got us all depressed.
But I didn't have to make that positive, actually.
No, there's no coming back from that whole thing.
No.
No, but you're right, especially when countries are in a situation like Brexit, in a very chaotic political situation, it feels more male-dominated and misogynistic and white.
That's so white. Oh.
Because, you know, those people are usually the ones that got us into those situations anyway, like Brexit.
Yeah.
It's that kind of mentality and it's that demographic.
Mm-hmm.
So it all amplifies. And that maybe that's one of the reasons why in the UK it's going even worse. And it's kind of like the opposite of the pattern that we're seeing in other European countries or even in Canada.
And I think this whole Brexit debate has brought out a whole different type of male politician who is... I mean, it's kind of reflecting the strongman pattern from around the world, obviously, because it's national populist politicians.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it's a different kind of masculinity, which is much more about shouting down your opponents. It's much more about portraying yourself as the victim whilst attacking others. And it's less respectful than politics has ever been before.
Yeah. And again, it's that same mentality who would go out and send those threats and abuse. And it's coming from that like same place.
Racial abuse in general is going up in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Islamophobia rising so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-Semitism as well. So, and now you've got a prime minister who has called black people pickaninnies.
Yep.
Which is this really like old-fashioned racist term. And he called women wearing the niqab letterboxes. By making him prime minister, we've legitimized such a huge kind of streak of racism and sexism.
And that's why everything gets amplified.
Yeah.
Because it's legit now. You can do it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like all the white supremacist violent acts that are going on in the US and how they're on the rise because the presidency of Donald Trump legitimized all of that.
Yeah, exactly. So look, going back to the elections in Switzerland, what do these results really mean then?
Yeah, so let's go even deeper, right? And talk about what kind of platforms these parties have campaigned on. The SVP, the far-right People's Party, campaigned on restrictions on immigration and asylum seekers. No surprise there, of course. And limiting Switzerland's ties with Brussels, who's not even a member state. So a very Eurosceptic approach. Again, no surprise.
Yeah. And to add something there, they are the ones who pushed for this referendum about reducing immigration in 2014, right? Because Switzerland is kind of a semi-direct democracy, which won narrowly. Very narrowly, it was 50.3% in favor. But basically, yeah, in a parallel to Brexit, it was demanding something that's basically impossible, which is to limit immigration, because they don't like that side of things, without limiting the benefits that come with being in the single market. So they were put in a difficult position where they had to comply with the results of this referendum.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, they couldn't leave the single market because that's not actually what people voted for. They had a really difficult negotiation about what they could do to kind of stay in the single market, but still comply with the results of this referendum, which I think should have been a 2/3 majority rather than a simple majority, because 50.3% doesn't seem like enough to make such a huge change, right? But they compromised on the fact that from 2016, Switzerland and the EU have this new agreement that this new Swiss law will come into place that requires Swiss employers to give priority to Swiss-based job seekers.
Yeah, the SVP really did have a very far-right platform.
Mm.
Even their relationship to climate change. I mean, they don't deny that it is happening, but they say, yeah, we're not sure to what extent human activity plays a role.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the level. And they call the targets of the Paris Agreement unrealistic. Like even those targets.
Yeah, like quite mild targets.
Yeah, like quite mainstream status quo targets. So that's why during the campaign, they didn't pledge to pursue bold climate action.
Wow.
But the way that they frame what was happening, the mobilization around the climate crisis was really interesting. They called all of it a climate hysteria, like a hype. And they were implying that the Green parties were taking advantage of this hype and then they shouldn't, which is just like exactly like you said. If we're calling this a hype, then they took advantage of another hype, which was immigration, the anti-immigration.
Yeah.
And how much the Europeans were obsessing over it back in 2014 and 15.
Yeah, exactly. They spend their whole time stoking fear.
Yeah, and that hype was still continuing. It was still there. Even until a year ago, immigration was more important to the Swiss than climate change. Hmm. But then, of course, the youth climate strikes, Greta Thunberg, all of that has happened. And they even had a huge rally in Bern in September that drew over 100,000 people.
That's big for Switzerland.
But that's also understandable because Switzerland is especially vulnerable to climate change. The temperatures in a country are rising twice as quickly as the global average.
Oh.
And that's why the Green Party has attracted most of the young people, especially the ones that were voting for the first time.
Yes, excellent news. And what's going to happen now then in terms of the results?
Right. So as usual in Switzerland, no single party secured a majority. But also they have a bit of a complicated system. So they have these parliamentary elections. They choose their lawmakers and senators.
Mm-hmm.
And then in December, they're going to form a 7-seat federal council. It's like a cabinet.
Yeah.
And this council has been dominated by the same 4 freaking main parties.
Yeah.
They actually call this magic formula. So magical. You need to see it. Since like 1959, it's just been these 4 parties.
Uh-huh.
And as you can imagine, the Greens are not one of them. So the idea is the presidency rotates each year.
Okay.
So looking at the results, the Greens finished 4th, narrowly beating the Christian Democrats, which was a part of the magic formula.
Ooh.
Right? So they were in the council.
Mm.
So that may mean that the Greens may get into this 7-seat federal council. But it's not clear because the makeup of the federal council doesn't necessarily reflect the federal election results.
Okay. They may not be represented on the 7-seat council.
Right. So for them to get a seat, for the Greens to get a seat in the cabinet instead of the Christian Democrats, who are right behind them, they will need the support from other parties.
Hmm.
So they had this vote on the 11th of December to form the next 7-seat council. And as usual, the status quo parties didn't work with the Greens. So even though the Greens won 13% of the vote and they overtook the Christian Democrats as the 4th most popular party in parliament, the other major parties have decided against appointing a Green onto the federal council. So there you go. There you go. Do you like what you're hearing? Us talking about green politics? Creating a green space to talk about our growing movement that's changing narratives and going deeper with the people who make up the movement. Well, we have more in store for you. In addition to this podcast, we're starting a new project. Here's what we'll be doing and where you can hear more from us.
What about the temperatures today? And is there an emphatic link to climate change?
I mean, it must be quite fun being part of opposition. You can just promise what you want, can't you?
So what's the point of voting Green then?
Tackling what you define as the climate emergency.
This is just typical opposition politics. Fancy baubles that a party can put forward if you don't really think you're going to have to work out how the sun's up.
If climate change is what we think it is, if it's real, if the scientists are right.
Why do you potentially want to cripple the economy?
What is climate action?
Ever find yourself shouting at the TD, wondering why there is still a climate denialist on there, when scientists say we have just 10 years to deal with the climate emergency?
Why are we just watching the leaders of 2 parties?
Is this it? Are these my 2 options? Don't you just go, where are the Greens?
Well, we do. And we're also concerned about the climate crisis, the Brexit mess, rising inequality and poverty, and the far right.
If you are too, then this is the space for you. Hi, welcome to Green Space. I'm Seden Onnar.
And I'm Julia Legutte. The Green Party of England and Wales brings so many bold ideas and policy proposals to the mainstream debate.
Ideas like the 4-day week, universal basic income, measuring a happiness index rather than endless growth, and the Green New Deal.
A plan to transform our transportation, energy, and economy by spending £100 billion a year for 10 years to reach net zero carbon emissions by 2030.
So we're establishing this platform to talk about those green ideas, to find out more about the fine details of the party's platform, to understand this growing movement that's changing narratives, and to go deeper with the people who make up the movement.
Watch this space, because so much content is coming your way.
But in the meantime, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends and family to subscribe too. Tweet about it. Post it on Facebook for that uncle and auntie too. Basically, get the word out.
So crossing the Atlantic to Canada, Canadian Greens had a nail-biting federal election on the 21st of October, with a run-up where, as you probably know if you listened to Sedan's interview with Abhijit Mané.
And if you didn't, just do it now.
Yeah, just do it now. Yeah, do it.
Get on it.
Elizabeth May, Green Party leader, was leading in the polls, and climate change was arguably the biggest issue for voters.
Yeah, and the results are in. Historic results for the Canadian Greens. Over 1 million people voted for the Greens in Canada. So they tripled their seats, doubled their votes.
Hell yes.
So that means they're going to have 3 Green MPs in the House of Commons in the Canadian Parliament. So Elizabeth May and Paul Manley will be returning to the Parliament, and Jenica Atwin will be joining them for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Overall, Trudeau's party, the Liberals, again, they came out with the most seats, but they actually didn't get the most votes. That was the Conservative Party. And the Liberal Party actually lost 20 seats. So they're just short of a majority.
Mm-hmm. So then, did the Canadian voters actually get what they voted for? Even the percentages for the other parties. Mm-hmm. The Canadian Greens got 6.5% of the vote. How many seats did they get?
Mm.
3. Mm-hmm. Which means that that's less than 1% of the seats in the parliament.
Yeah.
The New Democratic Party, the NDP, got almost 16% of the votes, but got 7% of the seats.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the only party that benefited from this was the Liberals.
Oh, Trudeau's party. What a surprise.
What a surprise. Oh, wonder why he first promised to change the electoral system, reform it, and then he totally didn't do that.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it in Abhijit's interview when he told us that, well, he told you that Trudeau had promised to change the system if he won the election in 2015, and then just kind of unashamedly just went back on that promise.
How can someone like live with themselves? Like seriously, yeah. when you go back home, imagine you're Justin Trudeau. Let's. Okay, we're doing
Ooh,
this.
Oh, God,
now.
Okay. Mental
let's do it,
exercise.
Let's do it. But no, seriously, promising something to do something, that's very. He wasn't even like tiptoeing around it.
Mm.
We have videos and clips of him saying, once I have the power, which he was saying that for the 2015 elections, then he got the power.
Yeah.
So I'm proposing we make every vote count. We are committed to ensuring that the 2015 election will be the last federal election using first past the post.
So like when you go back home, you're just sitting down. How can you feel at peace with that?
Mm. Mm.
Just as an individual, as a human being.
Yeah. There's so much self-justification going on, isn't there? And like, mm-hmm. Oh, but you know, what's good for Canada is Liberals staying in power. So This is actually what's best for Canada. I guess it's that kind of power. Once you have power, it does corrupt you. It's such a cliche. But
Yeah. But I mean, it's a cliche for a reason.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But for Canada, for the common good, for the greater cause, it's good if the Liberals have more seats. Yay. But that also means people basically that don't want to vote for the Liberals or the Conservative Party are not going to be represented in the parliament.
Mm-hmm.
At least. Not as much as they should have.
Yeah.
In accordance with how many votes these parties get.
Yeah, it doesn't represent what Canadians actually wanted.
Just to put everything into perspective, because I think it becomes really clear when we compare all these elections and the election results from Switzerland, Portugal, and Canada, it's really clear the difference between having proportional representation in place and then not having proportional representation of
place. Having a winner takes all system.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So in Switzerland, the Green Party, the GPS, got 13.2% of the votes. That meant 14% of the seats in the parliament. So that means they got 28 seats. The Green Liberals in Switzerland, they got 8% of the votes and they got 16 seats.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Portugal, like we mentioned, Livre just got over 1% of the votes, and they got 1 MP into the parliament.
That's crazy compared to how difficult it is in other countries to get a member of parliament.
Mm-hmm. And then the PAN party got 3% of the vote, and they have 4 MPs in the parliament.
Mm.
But then you're looking over Canada, the Canadian Greens got 6.5% of the votes, and they couldn't even get 1% of the seats in the House of Commons.
Yeah. And to give you the British equivalent example, in 2015, Greens across England and Wales got more than 1 million votes, and we got 1 MP. So that's 1 million votes per member of parliament. And in comparison, it only took 34,000 votes to elect a single Conservative MP.
Yeah, you just don't get what you vote for.
No. Mm-hmm. Some people's votes are worth 30 times less than others.
Yeah. Isn't it hard to expect people to get inspired and to go out and vote if you're dealing with this kind of an electoral system? Because with voting in democracy, the goal is for the popular vote to translate into actual representation in the parliament, right?
Yeah.
So it's really simple. I'm not excusing the low voter turnout and the people that don't vote, but if you're not getting what you vote for.
Yeah. First past the post elections suffer from low turnout as well. And in general, they're about 5 to 8% lower turnout for first past the post non-proportional elections than for proportional representation elections.
And that's why it's really hard to mobilize people around voting and elections in countries like Canada and the UK. And those smaller parties, non-status quo, non-mainstream parties, they have so many responsibilities when there's an election coming up. They need to get people, inspire them to vote and increase the voter turnout because it's beneficial for them, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then they need to go out there and persuade voters to believe in that. First of all, they will best serve them, so they should vote for them. But also say, hey, look, enough other people share the same set of preferences, so they will vote for us as well.
Yeah.
And you're doing all of this work with so little money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've got double the messaging that you need to get out to people. You've got this huge uphill battle of persuading people that you can win in the first place. That's actually, in my experience, that's the hardest thing that Greens have to do when they're campaigning. Because if you look at their policies and how many people like their policies are the most popular. In the UK, at least, in England and Wales, the Green Party's policies are effectively the most popular across the country, and they're the most well-liked party.
Mm-hmm. It's all tangled up, right? Their challenge is the electoral system. Their challenge is this bias. Their challenge is the media's framing. The same goes for Bernie Sanders when he's on the debate stage, that podium, and they ask him, but how are you going to actually pay for Medicare for All? Do you think it's popular enough? It's the most popular policy proposal
really
in the US right now. Even Republicans support the bill. But you get that question. And how much of a struggle this whole thing is has been so evident by what's happening during the campaigning season for the UK elections.
Yes.
My personal observation is that people don't really talk about the issues. They don't get to talk about the issues because they're just talking about alliances and how to get around the system, how we can kind of work within the first past the post and still make something happen.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the campaigning and the messaging is, well, from Labour, there's a lot of, you need to vote tactically to keep the Tories out.
Mm-hmm. Which is what Justin Trudeau said. What Abhijit said when I interviewed him just sums the whole thing up, this whole idea of strategic voting. He said it means that you think one of those parties, like Justin Trudeau's Liberals or Corbyn's Labour, is entitled to your vote. And the fact that you can't vote for what you actually want, but against what you don't want.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is such a pessimistic way of looking at politics. It's the opposite of mobilization, that pessimistic way of looking at politics and elections.
Yeah, it's pure negative campaigning. It's
exactly.
You're in it to avoid the worst rather than to push for something inspiring or exciting. And it's definitely a big reason why people are so disillusioned and disenfranchised in the UK, definitely. And I think our broken democracy is a big part of why people felt so left behind and silenced mm-hmm. in the run-up to the EU referendum in a way that was really harnessed by the Leave campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
So for about 90% of the time since 1935, the UK has had single-party majority governments, which means one party's just in charge.
Rules it all.
Rules it all. But not a single one of them had the support of a majority of voters.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and the current government, which is a kind of a loose coalition between the Conservatives and the DUP, they share a majority of the seats with just 43% of the vote. We're completely used to governments which do not have the mandate or the approval of a majority of the voters. And that's just the people who vote, let alone all the people who don't vote, because there's no point where they're living.
Exactly. And that's the majority not being represented.
Yeah.
And with this system in place, you also don't have the minorities represented in the parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this way of looking at proportional representation and having minorities in the parliament and calling that division mm-hmm. a divided country. Mm. No, that's just different opinions. Those people already live in that country. You have those different opinions. That is what democracy is. How can you expect to rule the whole country with basically two parties?
Yeah.
One, the majority, the government, the other one just like shouts in the parliament from time to time.
Yeah. And often very similar ideologically.
Absolutely.
Similar.
Yeah. All coming from that classic economic conflict of conservatives, liberals, or the right and the left.
Yeah. And from a Green point of view, those two perspectives are very much the same. They're very much still pro-growth politics that just wants to kind of grow economies, that centers GDP, that's not taking nature and also global situations into account.
Exactly. And that's why this is an antiquated system, and they are a huge part of that antiquated system.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why people are not satisfied anymore when they see these like little differences between the Liberals and the Conservatives or the Labour and the Tories when it comes to the big stuff, right? Like from a Green perspective.
Yeah.
Or even, to be honest, on like Brexit. I mean,
yeah.
People now see how they're unaccustomed to really understand what's going on. And, you know, we talked about that hype, the climate hysteria.
Mm.
They're not used to keeping up with those things and how to take ownership of the day's agenda.
Mm.
And they're not specialized enough to kind of going after and tackling what needs to be tackled urgently.
Yeah.
Like the issues of today feel really big and urgent, like the climate crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So people really don't find comfort in politicians saying, hey, look, relax, everything's going to be okay. Shush, it's just going to be okay.
Mm.
But they do find comfort in politicians with just focused agendas like the Greens.
Yeah.
People don't want the balanced status quo portfolio of policies, but they want like a mastery of specific issues.
Yeah, they want experts and enthusiasts. And basically the Greens are just people who've been thinking about this for 30 years and mm-hmm. who've integrated.
And screaming.
Yeah, and sounding the alarm. And I think voters, they can see the difference between that party and the party that's recently picked up some easy popular.
Or was forced to pick up.
Yeah, exactly. Was pressured to pick up some kind of some policies that could be meaningless, like Green New Deal. Anyone can call whatever they want to call Green New Deal. It doesn't have a set meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people can tell the difference.
People can tell, but when they can't reflect that.
Exactly.
Into the way that they vote.
Yeah.
That's when you're facing all these problems. And it's so embedded in the UK's political culture that they even transfer this to the other countries that they colonize, like the US, India, Canada, all these countries that we talk about.
Barbados.
There is a reason, there is a reason why they have first past the post in place.
Mm-hmm. Except for Australia, that got rid of first past the post in 1918. And now they have not a completely proportional system, but a more proportional system, AV and a mixture of AV and STV.
alternative vote and single transferable vote.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The whole point of democracy is to mediate conflict, right? It's to work out how all these opposing worldviews actually will work together to have a harmonious country that works for the common good, that works for the most people possible. Mm-hmm. Every time that there's an election and people have this reduced choice of basically two parties, which are very similar, you're just shutting out so many voices and reducing the whole caliber of the debate, reducing what's being talked about, reducing what will change and what the vision of what the country could look like.
Exactly. And also, another argument that they sometimes use when it comes to first past the post is it helps us make decisions more quickly.
Mm.
So when you're tackling urgent matters, it'll help us because there's less voices, right? So it's easier to make a decision and move forward.
Yeah.
Then why is nothing happening? Pretty much nothing happening on climate change, which is the most urgent issue that they need to be tackling. You have a almost two-party parliament where you can just make decisions in the way that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you not moving forward? Well, I mean, you are moving forward with climate emergency declarations, but also kind of eyeing the airport expansion, Heathrow expansion.
Yeah. Studies have found that countries using proportional systems set stricter environmental policies and were faster to ratify the Kyoto Protocol. Zooming in onto the UK, compared to its European peers, the UK has lagged behind on action on climate change and the uptake of renewable energy, especially compared to countries like Germany, for example. First past the post is a key obstacle to real action on protection of nature and action on climate change.
Hell yeah, that's what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what I'm talking about. When you have a parliament with diversity of opinions, you take action.
Yeah, and
at least better action and faster than the ones with like two parties or FTPT parliaments.
Yeah.
They want these parliaments with less number of parties because majority governments, they say that they take decisions easily and quickly, so that you're not dealing with a lot of parties discussing issues for a long time, and you don't have minority governments where taking decisions is hard.
Yeah.
But then you're not actually tackling the most urgent issues in the way that you said you would with this kind of a parliament and with this kind of a system in place.
Yeah, exactly, because the amount of worldviews that get to decide what the urgent topics are is just two. It's just so reduced.
Exactly. And they don't really care about those things because usually smaller parties and minority, quote-unquote, voices care about those issues.
Yeah.
But again, they don't make their ways into parliament.
Yeah. And radical change and moving forward as a society, I think, will always come from the fringe.
Mm-hmm.
It will never come from the big establishment parties.
Because they already have a place. Why would they want change?
Yeah, they are the system.
Yeah. Why would they? That's also like simple logic, just like, well, I'm not really getting what I voted for. Why would I vote? And it's the same logic. I just have a lot of power. Why would I give it up?
Mm. And even if it's not happening at a conscious level, but just this is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Just not being able, because you're in the system and you are the system, you're not able to see the alternative to it, which is what parties like the Greens can see. Most countries have a system of proportional representation around the world, and most countries in Europe certainly do. I think Labour's the only social democrat party in the world that doesn't support proportional representation, that supports first past the post.
Mm.
Mm.
I
can't even handle.
I'm so done. In pretty much every episode, if we're talking about an election, and obviously the Greens, we talk about first past the post. Like, I've realized just covering it so much because whenever we talk about the challenges of the Greens, it's never the policies. It's never the messaging. It's never, it's never, oh, how can we like sell this policy proposal to people?
Yeah.
We don't even have to sell.
Yeah.
It's the electoral system that's in the way. It's always that challenge.
Mm. That's a completely different strategy to what Greens in Germany are talking about or Greens in Portugal. And if you look at the US, I mean, that's an even more bipolar, binary electoral system. And the Green Party is non-existent. It doesn't get invited to debates. It doesn't really get a look in. especially at this kind of presidential level. That's a big part of why the US is so behind on the environment.
Yeah. Different and smaller parties aside, even different voices within the Democratic Party, it took them so much effort and basically a revolution to get onto the debate that stage and make their voice heard.
Yeah.
Even the Democrats, even a different opinion that said, you know what, maybe this Medicare bill, healthcare bill that we had sucks.
Yeah.
Because people are dying, so maybe should we just change it?
Yeah, but that's the thing with these two-party systems is that they're so artificial, these parties. They're grouping together so many people who shouldn't be in the same party, who have such different views, but they've only had to choose between two parties. So people will spend more of their time, all of these activists that have so many cool ideas will spend all of their time with internal campaigning to just get their party to pick up this policy or, you know, talk about this or have this platform instead of actually going out and persuading voters and changing the country.
And then that's why those two parties or the main parties, even if they adopt a new policy, they're usually forced to adopt that policy.
Yeah.
By their own party people.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Momentum, what Momentum is doing with Labour, with the Labour Party.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
They're basically telling their establishment, hey, we need to do better, we need to be better.
The same as what's happening in the Democrats is you have this quite radical set of people in these kind of centre-left parties, and then you have the completely establishment centrist sector, and they're never going to agree, but they shouldn't be in the same party.
Yeah, I remember a lot of people after 2015, the Democratic primaries, after people found out that Bernie was not going to be the main candidate, they established this new movement telling Bernie to establish a new party, a third party. It was called the Draft Bernie. That was what the movement was called. And Bernie, you know, Bernie Sanders wanted to go with the Democrats. That's his decision.
Okay.
But, you know, people had that idea for a reason. They knew that what that movement had, what kind of a country that movement wanted, was really different.
Yeah.
And that's why most Greens don't join the Democrats, even though that means it's going to be pretty much impossible for them to exist in a political arena.
Yeah.
They still don't do it because they're really different.
They're so different.
But then that means the Senate, the Congress.
Yeah.
No Green voices.
Yeah, that's very true.
And I'm glad we covered these three elections, because I think especially the comparison is breathing example of how much electoral systems matter.
Yeah.
But then there are some similarities as well, like the grassroots and citizen activism and mobilization around the climate crisis and women's rights and equality.
Yeah.
An anti-racism movement.
Yeah.
There is a pattern.
Sounds like in Canada, definitely a lot of energy around changing the voting system. And in the UK, this whole deadlock that we've had for the past few years and this general election has really pushed a lot more people than ever before, I think, to question our democracy and our voting system. And you've got groups like Make Votes Matter, seeing this as their opportunity to change this antiquated system. And I think it looks like changes could be on the horizon.
All right, folks, that's our show. You can follow us and show us some love on Twitter at Big Green Pulp Pod. You can find us on any podcast apps, iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud.
And if you want to help us make green politics more accessible, subscribe and support us by leaving us a rating or a review. Thank you so much, and see you soon.